The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that.
I'm on her side, and I don't know exactly what her side is.
I think you're totally spot on with that.
I sound inept just to help you out.
It's been a rough week, thanks to your advice.
Are you a regular listener to this program?
As much as I can be.
There's your problem.
I would not ever disagree with you because you're so smart. You have a lot of answers to a lot of things.
You don't want to listen to me on the radio.
So what do I do?
I can't give you any direction.
Thank you for empowering me. I needed that.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
Well, do you know somebody who does?
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Privilege to be with you. Truly is. Not just saying that because you have to say nice things when you're a host on the radio. Make people think you're real kind and wonderful. Somebody said that to me once. You must be a great dad. And I said, you don't know that. You'd have to ask my wife. Let my 10 kids take a vote. I think my wife would be the tie-breaking vote, you know, 5-5. She'd break the tie. But I did say, you don't know that. You only know what I say on the radio. Which will move me into my monologue here in a second. This is The Doctor Is In, and this is the Friday variant of The Doctor Is In. Look back Friday. Previous calls edited at the capable hands of producer man and editor Andrew Krucek. Take the calls, replay what Andrew believes should be replayed. I think I can't prove it, but I think he cuts me out a lot. And then I get to comment more on the calls. And whatever direction I go depends on a lot of things, whether there is a word or phrase that needs defined in the call and I didn't do it in the call, whether there is a direction I wanted to go, but the caller clearly was asking something else. Usually let the caller direct the call, but much of the time, not much, some of the part of a little bit of the time, because I can't say usually and then say most of the time. That doesn't make sense. Usually let the caller direct the call, but every so often there's a direction I would like to go, and I use Look Back Friday for that. So we'll get to all that. The bottom line is, if you just want to know the common theme on these calls, I just want to talk more. That's it. So we'll get to that. What was I looking at? Oh, I had opening monologue planned. Well, let's go in this direction. One of the common accusations leveled at particularly homeschooling parents, but any parent really, who doesn't go with the flow of the culture, and that I believe pretty much that's anybody who wants to raise a kid that is morally responsible, and has a bit of a childhood. Well, that parent is going to hear this once or more. You can't protect them forever. That's the real world out there. They're going to be exposed to it. And then what happens? It's going to hit them. It's going to blindside them. They're going to run like wild dogs when they get to college. Isn't that a common one? You can't protect them forever. My grandfather, Angelo, had, I believe Papo had, I think, a third grade education. I know he could read because he did read a lot. But I believe his education was third grade. My grandmother was sixth grade, I think, if I got this right. If somebody would have told my grandfather, Angelo, you know, you can't protect the Nick forever. You got to let him experience it. It's the real world. And let's just say that my dad was 9 at the time. He wasn't 17. He wasn't 24. He was 9. I know my grandfather with his third grade education would have looked at that person and said, that's not my job, is to protect. He grew up soon enough in his broken English. He always had an Italian accent because he came here as a 17-year-old and he learned English after he had gone through puberty, and that's real hard when that gets wired in. It's real hard to break the accent. So Papa would say, what are you saying? Am I not supposed to protect? That's my son. I don't want the world to get to him like that. He's got a time to grow up. Only since we've become so sophisticated have we said, you can't protect them forever. That's a real world out there. They're going to have to experience it. I got to believe those of you who hear that are not protecting them forever. You're protecting them longer, especially longer than the culture wants you to protect them. I think it's safe to say that the average 14-year-old of my mother's generation was more innocent than the average 11-year-old of my generation, than the average 8-year-old now. Or reverse that. The average 8-year-old now is more worldly than the average 11-year-old of my generation, than the average 14-year-old of my mom's generation. The culture conspires, I believe, to push kids into adult-type thinking. And I use that very loosely because adult-type thinking isn't necessarily moral. But the thinking that the culture wants you to have regarding life, regarding morality, regarding marriage, regarding all kinds of things, regarding kids. And the parent who says, I want my 9-year-old to be a 9-year-old. I want my 12-year-old to be a 12-year-old. A personal story. At the time that we started adopting our children, they got a little bit older. And my wife, I think Andrew was probably 5. Hanny was 3. Her name was Hannah. We call her Hanny. My wife entertained the idea of homeschooling. She wanted to homeschool. Now, at that time, I was resistant. This was this many years ago. I was resistant because I was still working in the schools. I consulted to 12 school districts. I was working in the schools. And I thought, honey, how's that look? You know, I'm actively involved in the schools. That's my main direction of my career. I'm not so sure about this. Plus, I remember when I was a kid, I liked all the school stuff. So we sent them the first couple of years to school. Andrew went through second grade. Hanny went through first grade, I believe it was. And we noticed a change in my son. First of all, he was learning sexual terms. I don't want to be specific about it, but it wasn't good. And he was also imbibing the peer group rules. For example, when his mom would drop him off from the school's door, he would want to get out of the car real quick before she could kiss him, or he didn't really want his sister to walk with him. She was a first grader, he was a second grader. No, not cool. Now, Andrew by nature is a very sweet kid. It's just his nature. He wasn't defiant, he wasn't aggressive, he wasn't any of those things. He was easy. But I watched Andrew get shaped by the peer rules as soon as the second grade. And I watched my daughter Hanny come home from kindergarten with sexual phrases that I thought, what? So I told my wife, honey, you want to homeschool? Let's homeschool. Let's do our best in our home to slow down this process. It was within about a year that Hannah became Andrew's best friend, and he didn't even know that he wasn't supposed to be seen with her when he was out in public. And he didn't even know that it was uncool to hold his mother's hand, which he did till he was 10 or 11. Because he didn't have the peers shaping him at that particular place. Now, again, the majority of you have your children in schools, public, private. And I'm not saying you can't raise great kids. Of course you can. But I am saying that there are other ways that you can protect their innocence through TVs, protection, computers, protection, somewhat peers protection. There's just a lot of ways you can do this. And when somebody says you can't protect them forever, they're real cliche. They think they're real bright saying something like that. You just look at them and say, I'm not trying to protect them forever. I'm trying to protect them now. I want to give them a longer childhood than the culture is giving our kids. That's what you say. Okay, enough of that. When I come back, be with you.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, teach me to pray. The free Ignatian Prayer Series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
2026 promises to be a great year for travel, to explore the Bible and our Catholic heritage. Steve and Janet Ray here. We're scheduling our favorite pilgrimage sites just for you to enrich your faith. Ireland, Lourdes and Fatima, our St. Paul Mediterranean cruise. As always, we have the best Catholic guides, hotels, and restaurants in our famous time-tested Footprints of God pilgrimages.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. Maybe you've even prayed the prayer of spiritual communion. Spiritual communion is a concept that goes all the way back to the 4th century. It flourished in the Eastern Church and gradually moved west. Spiritual communion stresses the transcendence of God, where we unite our desires, intentions, and loves with the holy sacrifice of the Mass and the consecration of the Eucharist at the altar. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I'm trying to save money. You know, as I get older, I'm trying to save money. And you go to these discount kind of places. So we needed an exterminator. And they can be expensive. These guys come in, they can be real expensive. So I looked up discount exterminators. Don't have the Yellow Pages anymore. Remember the Yellow Pages? So I got it. Called a discount exterminator. And I was surprised how cheap he was. I mean, he was way below anybody else, way below. So he showed up, and it was a guy with a rolled-up magazine. Yeah, it was cheap, though. It's real cheap. Susan from Michigan is second-guessing her decision to not tell her mother something. Was that she didn't tell her last week? Didn't tell her this morning? She didn't tell her when? Well, in Susan's case, this is a whole lot of second guessing. She didn't tell her 35 years ago.
It's a situation that happened 34 years ago. So my brother and his girlfriend became pregnant and, obviously not married. They told my father, me, and my other sibling. My brother was scared to death to tell my mother. So we all knew, and we thought it's my brother's responsibility to tell my mother, not ours. And he ended up waiting a very, very long time. When my mother did find out, to say she had a conniption is to put it mildly.
Which is what your brother thought would happen.
What he thought would, well, we were not raised to be, you know, having intercourse outside of marriage kind of thing. And so my mother would not have agreed with any of his lifestyle, and definitely bringing a baby into the world, you know, outside of marriage would have really been upsetting. And so
is that baby still around?
I think, well, oh yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He yeah. married the girlfriend?
He did eventually. Mm-hmm.
They've since
divorced.
Oh, no, okay.
He's since divorced. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, why do you think he told you guys and not mom?
Because of her reaction, that she would have, her anger, her upset, the fact that when, way back when he originally moved out of the house, he moved out to move in with a different girl, another girlfriend, which broke my mother's heart. He wasn't allowed to come into the house. Then when he came over, we had to visit him outside. It was not good. So
his view was, this would have been the ultimate sin in your mother's eyes, and therefore she probably would have either disowned him or for certain had nothing to do with that girl.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or disowned him, I'm sure, probably, yeah. But
how'd she find out?
So, you know, I can't really remember. I don't, honestly, it was such a bad, bad reaction. She didn't talk to all of us for I don't know how long. I don't know how many weeks. We all got the cold shoulder.
Well, it sounds like your mom has always been the one in the family that people tiptoed around.
Well, she definitely felt it was all of us against her quite often. So she was the disciplinarian. My dad would want to be a little softer on us and let us do things that she didn't think we ought to be doing, and yes.
Why did you think, Susan, that it was your responsibility to tell her?
I didn't think it was my responsibility to tell her. I thought it was my brother's responsibility. But the longer he kept waiting, it was bothering me that he didn't have the guts to tell her. I mean, I could understand why he didn't want to tell her, but it put all of the rest of us in a very bad position.
Well, it did. You were forced between two options, both bad. One, you keep the secret, figuring your mother's going to find out eventually, and then she's going to really be upset, not only at your brother, but at everybody else, because they basically put her out in the cold. She's the one that didn't know anything, and you guys all just had this cabal. That's one. Or two, you take it upon yourself to tell her, at which point your brother would kill you. So you were in a lose-lose there, Susan.
Sometimes I think my brother almost wished we would have told her so that he wouldn't have had to be the one to...
Well, yeah,
you know,
well, sure,
like he
of course. Yeah. But as you said, he went longer and longer without telling her. You felt more pressure, more confusion to tell her. But 34 years later, are you still second-guessing this?
I'm just wondering if I should have told her. Because, Dr. Ray, it was... not good at all. I mean, it was...
So you're saying
really
that
bad. It was really
if you
bad.
Would have told her initially, it wouldn't have been... It would have been less ugly because at least she wouldn't have felt like everybody ganged up on her.
I think so. I think she would have had a... I think in the end, that ended up being the bigger issue, was that she was not told when the rest of us were told.
Well, I find it interesting that your mother did not show any understanding of why it was that she was the only one not told. That she viewed it as, I'm the only one that is going to stand my moral ground here, and the rest of the family have acquiesced, rather than, he isn't going to tell me because he knows how I'm going to react, and I won't even allow this girl anywhere near our house. Oh, man. So many things as I was listening to that. The first thing that hit me, and why did I not say this then? If not the brother, then dad. Dad is the one to tell her, not the sister. Why didn't I say that? I said, this is probably a marital thing. Yeah, she was mad at all of you guys, but maybe the most mad at him. He didn't tell his wife, which, wrong or right, she could have interpreted it as, you're going to regret not saying that for the next. my producer, Andrew Krucek, just typed here, you are going to regret not saying that back then for the next 34 years. I don't know why we put 35 years up there, Andrew. It's 34. We just rounded up, I guess. I don't know if she was second-guessing herself or if she was saying, looking back on it, I think it would have been better if I did this. Yes. But that's just, at the time, I made a decision. Hindsight tells me, perhaps, I didn't make the best decision. Now, keeping in mind, Dad really was the one to tell her. So she made a mistake. Or I wouldn't even call it a mistake. She made a judgment that as she looks back on it, she said, well, I probably should have done it different. I got to tell you, I don't know how many millions of those I have in my life where I look back with new information coming out in the future where I say, you know, now that I think back on it, I should have said this. I should have done this. We're not God. We can't see the future. We can't know. But then, this is something else I didn't bring out. This is what I mean when I say there's all kinds of stuff percolating through my head. I was going to say, is it possible that your mom was more upset over the fact that she wasn't told? She took it personal. You people all conspired against her. Than the fact that her son got his girlfriend pregnant. And then, about a minute later, Susan said, I think it was a bigger issue that we didn't tell her. I caught that. And I remember thinking, and this is what I mean about not going off on a tangent, because this is a pretty heavy issue for Susan. She was second-guessing herself. But I wanted to offer the thought, and I would have, if we were in therapy, I would offer this thought. I said, Susan, it sounds like your mom was more upset at the perspective that her family was saying, we don't want to tell you because you're a lunatic, than the fact that he actually got his girlfriend pregnant. And mom kind of confirmed their fears that she did. She stopped talking to all of them. I don't know how she treated this girl, because we didn't have time. It's not therapy. We didn't have time to find out how she treated this girl as time passed. My guess would be there was always a strain in the relationship. And this is one of those things where the best thing would have been to say, all right, I have to welcome this baby. I have to welcome this girl. Not because I tolerate it, not because I condone it, but because I want to treat them well. And it's kind of fascinating, isn't it? Mom was so judgmental about this, so unforgivable, sin-like about this, that she alienated so many people. She took it personally. I guess I would leave Susan with this. Susan, don't second guess yourself. You made a judgment at the time. Not an easy one, by the way, because you were stuck, to use a cliche, between a rock and a hard place. Your dad should have done it. And the fact that you didn't, you weighed all the factors and said, well, I guess I better not. And you look back on it and you say, well, maybe I should have. But then maybe you would second guess yourself because your brother would have written you off. You see what I mean? You make a judgment. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it don't. But you don't think about it for 35 years.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God, but I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have, and we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize his presence, and in proportion as we believe that he is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
We were made for spiritual greatness. The divine image is in every person, however dimly seen in some. God gave man a spiritual and immortal soul. From the first moment in the womb, he or she is destined for eternal life with God. Man, by his reasoning, is capable of understanding the order the Creator has established. By our will, we are capable of aligning ourselves with our true good, which is where we find our perfection. Reason provides recognition of God's voice directing us toward good and avoiding evil. The law of God is made known by our conscience and is fulfilled by the love of God and love of neighbor. Because our first parents sinned, we suffer the wound of original sin. Thus, while we still desire good, we are inclined toward evil and subject to error. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
A very wonderful woman I knew had four children, and all four died. And somebody went up to her one day, and they said, "Oh, what a pity." And she said, "Oh, no, what a blessing." If we don't begin to look at everything with the eyes of Jesus, you will become helpless and hopeless.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Thank you for joining me. Dr. Ray Guarendi here, Program Doctors In. It's Look Back Friday, taking some questions from previous shows, programs, more proper word, and talking more about them. Idea we came up with now, Andrew Kruchek, producer man, tells me 11, 12 years ago now, if he would have asked me, when did we start Look Back Friday? I would have said, it's got to be 5 or 6 years. My cousin once said to me, anytime you're looking back on a memory, and you're trying to figure out how long ago it was, take the number you think it was and double it. And this is more true the further back it goes in your memory. There are things that I say, I found out, oh man, that had to be 10, 15 years ago. And somebody says, it was 24. It's like, oh, okay, all right. Now, AI is coming, whether we wanted to or not. And the implications of AI are so broad, so wide-reaching, we can't know. We can't predict all that it's going to do. There are certain scares being raised, I think rightfully so. But yet I think at the same time, it's going to have ramifications beyond even the smartphone. Bothers me that Elon Musk is scared to death of AI, and he is very clear about that. So let's let Michelle talk a little bit about one of the phenomena of AI, and it's gaining momentum. I'm hearing about this a lot. Let's let Michelle talk.
I was recently speaking to a young lady, and she was telling me how some of her college friends are using AI for therapy. And I just wondered if you've ran into that and what you think the results of that will be.
Yes, I have. The results are going to be I can charge less money. No. Okay. That's a self-absorbed answer. First of all, AI is still unreliable. As much as I was listening to a fellow who had a seminar. He worked for a corporation, and he had a seminar on AI. And the guy that was given the seminar said that a lot of the stuff that AI answers is unreliable or even incorrect, flat out incorrect. Mm-hmm. And they tested it. They asked AI some very, very obvious kinds of questions. AI missed it completely, totally. So that's the first thing. So you're gonna run into unreliability, and you're gonna give too much credibility to what the AI tells you. That's the first thing. The second thing is, good therapy needs to have some kind of relationship. All the research says this, that sometimes not as important as the type of therapy you practice is what they call the therapeutic alliance, which is, does the client trust the therapist to understand, to be genuine, and to give advice that would be within their worldview? Now, AI is not going to do that.
Right.
So I think there's severe chance to be badly misled. The other thing is this. If you're going to use AI as a therapist, you're going to be the one to ask the questions. You're going to be the one to say, well, okay, my mom said this, so what is the best way to answer my mom the next time she says that? Well, now that's ridiculous.
Right.
That's just flat out ridiculous.
Yes, yes. I suppose that it could be twisted in such a way as to give you
the answer you want,
or the answers that you want. Yes,
absolutely. And the other problem is, mm-hmm. and this is something I've railed about ever since the day I became a psychologist. Psychology is not formulas. You can't say, well, if a person does this, what is the best way to do this? You can't do that.
Right.
It mm-hmm. depends upon so many factors. So if a person asks AI and says, I've been feeling depressed lately, what do I need to do to get out of my depression? Well, AI will give maybe a bunch of generic suggestions, which may or may not relate at all to what the source of the depression is for that person. So these kids are going to be terribly misled.
Yes, I agree.
There you go. There's my rant. Well, that's only one aspect of AI as I become a little more familiar with it. Yeah, certainly it's going to change an awful lot of occupations. A lot. It's already happening. Heavy. A lot of kids graduating from college, which 10 years ago used to be job guaranteed degrees, are now having a hard time. Now, AI certainly cannot do the trades. So that's one good thing. Keep in mind that. If you want to make a decent living, you might have to head to the trades. Years ago. Many, many years ago. I don't want to estimate because I know it's going to be farther than I thought. I remember thinking, how is the world going to end? What will it be like when our Lord comes back? What will the world be like? You know, given that so many far-flung cultures see things differently, and religion is important to one culture, not to another. And I thought, and this was back then, I thought, I think technology is going to do it. Technology is going to swamp the human condition, and it's going to reach far into the most distant places. And at that time, technology like AI was not even on the horizon. You know, there were probably a few people talking about, what if we ever developed this kind of technology? Well, now, I think that AI is just going to affect so many aspects of life. Let me give you just a small, not a small one. This isn't a small one. This is, I guess, a big one. I'm going to run out of time. I'll hit it after the break. My brother and I were talking the other day, and he told me he saw four videos of four different people, terribly aggressive, irate, challenging against a group from the government. I won't mention the group. Probably don't have to stretch your mind too far to figure out who's getting an awful lot of heat these days and trying to do certain things. He said the person who posted this, and I forget who it was, maybe it was an organization, said, which ones of these are real and which ones are AI? All right, the music's going to start. I'll give you the answer on the other side. Start the music, Andrew. 1, 2, 3. Here we go. On the other side.
Welcome to Spirit of Stewardship. Jeremy Belsky is your host for real life stories, encouragement, and ideas to enhance your own gifts of work, wealth, and wisdom in response to God's blessings for you.
I'm Jeremy Belsky, and today's topic is Stewardship of the Environment, God's Creation of Nature. When you hear the message, be a wise steward of your resources, do you ever consider the role you play in your community environment? It's natural to think of time, talent, and treasure when stewardship is mentioned, but our faith teaches us that all is gift from God. Thus, respect for nature and doing our part to ensure a safe and clean environment is important. Here are just three areas we can pay more attention. A lot of action has been taken in recent years by nonprofits geared towards a cleaner environment. The first area of focus is to eliminate litter. Consider how your actions to pick up after yourself are pleasing to God. Be proud to do your part to keep your community and neighborhood clean. Secondly, look at ways to recycle and make the most out of your purchases. Does it matter to you that so much plastic consumes our landfills? Have you given thought as to how you can make a particular purchase last longer? Third, in a country filled with abundance, what's being done to ensure our nature and environment for the next generation? This is more than eating bread crust and cleaning off your plate. The root lies in not wasting what we've been given. There's a great deal of time and effort that goes into caring for our place of residence in addition to our possessions. Keeping up what is ours or giving our used possessions to the less fortunate are a couple of ways to be prudent stewards of our blessings from God. I'm Jeremy Belsky, your host for Spirit of Stewardship.
To learn how you can better share your talents and resources, contact your local parish priest. Your level of involvement in the church now positively impacts our faith in the future.
Okay, welcome back Friday, and I was talking about AI and the unpredictable, unintended consequences of what's going on with AI. It is a technology that will be beyond belief in its effect on our existence. My brother was telling me he saw on the, somebody posted on the internet, probably a group, four different videos of people violently, nastily attacking, with words, mostly with words, a particular law enforcement group. And the question was, which one of these are real? Which ones of these are AI? My brother said he saw it. He's a very observant guy. He said, no way I could tell. He said they were all AI. But they looked as completely real as it could possibly be. There wasn't a sign in there as you were observing this that would indicate, ooh, it looks kind of stiff. Ooh, I don't, that's not a real face. Nope. He said, the only way that they showed the viewer that there was an AI route to all this was when they focused in on, and you couldn't see this as you observed the picture, they focused in on one of the very, very aggressive individuals was a police officer. Forget where, maybe New York City, forget where. They focused in on his patch, not his badge. His badge looked legit. Patch on his uniform. And on the patch was nothing but gibberish. Just erratic signs of nothing, nothingness. So I think as AI gets better and better and better and better, you're not going to know what you see that's not your own eyes, not present to you physically. You're not going to know. And the other thing that's going to happen is we can no longer prove, we will no longer be able to prove that someone did something wrong because they can claim AI. They can say, that wasn't me. So what will happen is the very, very fabric of human interaction, in a sense, in a funny sort of sense, will actually revert back to person to person. Think about this. For most of human history, the human interaction was person to person physically. That's it. That's all you knew. There were no visual things. There were no pictures. There was nothing. You didn't know anything about anybody else except what you were told or you experienced physically and personally. That was it. So with the advent of pictures, photographs, television, computer, internet, more and more became real but not real. I remember years ago when I would get things via somebody's post, and it would look just fascinating. Wow, look at that. And then they'd say, computer-generated imagery. I said, wow, that looks so real. Now, it's going to be beyond that. And I guess it's going to come down to we're going to have to alter the way we see things, the way we look at things. You can't know anymore. Unless, and this is what I said to my brother, unless developed, and AI might have to do it, a way that you can ascertain, not through your own exploration, but through some kind of technique, some kind of what, I don't know, some kind of sophisticated technological device that you can ascertain whether this is real or not. That's it. And can you imagine a lawyer preparing for a case before an appellate court? And in the old days, he had to do a search. She had to do a search for relevant court rulings. Now, AI will just spit them all out. There they are. Far beyond anything the lawyer could have gotten on his or her own. Well, I just want to tell you, I'm here for you. I am not AI. But you can't know that, can you? It could be that you just called in, and Andrew Krucek has a very sophisticated AI over there in Ann Arbor, and probably would give more sophisticated answers than I would, especially on stuff like song titles, names of actors and actresses that you guys correct me on, rulings about adoption in various states. See, AI knows all that stuff. I don't. Be right back.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Looking for practical, faith-filled help to build the marriage you're longing for or become a more confident Catholic parent? I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, founder of the Catholic Home app. That's Catholic H-O-M for Catholic Households on Mission. The Catholic H-O-M app gives you daily coaching, creative tools, and real-life support to help your family thrive. Subscribe to the Catholic H-O-M app today and discover the path to a more rewarding, faith-filled family life.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it emptied. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won him. You didn't win him. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, no?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
All right, let's do the last call here on this Look Back Friday. Let's go to Jackie from Kansas. Now, this is a one-year-old, but I know you're thinking, well, wait a minute, that's just so far out of my bailiwick. I mean, my kids are grown, or I don't have a one-year-old. Yeah, but I always try to broaden the topic out to incorporate some general information or people that wouldn't be particularly asking that question or dealing with that issue. So let's go to Jackie from Kansas.
I raised several of my own and a few of some other people's, and I have not seen. I started noticing it about 3 months. He didn't just cry. He threw fits, and it was temper and rage. And other than when you cross him, he's just the sweetest little boy in the entire world.
Don't cross him.
All smiles and giggles.
Jackie, don't cross him. Give him what he wants at any time. Jeez, that's simple.
When he gets tired, when he gets hungry, mostly when he gets tired, he does not want to go to bed, but he gets mean. He pulls hair, and he gets a hold of my glasses, and he will not let go. And the more you try to get your hair or your ear or your glasses away from him, the harder he holds on. And, you know, if you have him in a backpack, you don't have very many hands to get a hold of his hands.
Why do you let him get close enough to grab you?
Well, you know, sometimes you got to rock the little kids to sleep. But
all right, let's go back to what you said at 3 months.
I need help. I have to go babysitting right now. All right. I need help.
Well, one-year-olds can only do so much damage. That's just got that. All right, so why did I say this isn't a problem? Because it's not. Here's why. You said back when he was 3 months, boy, this kid could just rage, right, at 3 months? Did you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going to assume that there's nothing physically going on. He's in pain or anything like that. I'm going to assume that the doctors have given it the best look that they can, and they're essentially saying, nope, he's healthy, healthy little boy.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We got to make sure we got that taken care of, because I know a whole bunch of moms would call me and say, Dr. Ray, you know, he could have this, he could have that. My son had this, my son had that. So let's just make sure that's it. So what seems to be the case is we've got a reactive little boy. For whatever the reason, he fires off. All right, got that. Hey, by the way, do you know how long I cried? I think I was 18 months old, and my mom left me with my aunt because they had to go somewhere. Do you know how long I cried?
All day?
9 hours, yeah.
Oh, my.
9 hours. Pretty good, huh? Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they brought my sister home, I was about 22 months old, and they put her in a crib, and I took a shoe and threw it in her face. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, all that said, so don't make me mad. Now,
okay.
What it sounds like is okay when he gets frustrated. Obviously, he's kind of trip switch. He lets it all hang out. And you said, well, I raised 22 children, and I didn't have any of them do that. Okay, good. None of your kids did that. This kid does. Oh, that's all that means. He does. There's nothing wrong. then he's just kind of a fiery little guy. My son Peter used to throw furniture. He was 18 months old, and we came downstairs, and we found all of our furniture tossed. All of it, just thrown. And he was sitting on top of it, kind of like, look what I did. He was the toughest kid we had. He's 28 years old now, and he is one of the sweetest, nicest, most thoughtful guys. Now, that said, what I'm saying to you is this doesn't mean anything for his future. Okay, this is just a one-year-old who's fiery. All right, we got that. So, a couple of things. When he throws this kind of craziness, you put him in a playpen, you let him burn himself out, or you strap him into his high chair, you let him burn himself out. You put him somewhere where he can rage until he's burnt out, and then you go get him. That's it. You go get him. In terms of him grabbing at you, grabbing your face, grabbing your hair, grabbing your eyes, grabbing your nose, grabbing your wallet, whatever he grabs.
He does all that.
Yeah. Keep in mind, look out. The guy's got elasto arms, all right? He's an octopus. He's going to grab anything he can grab. Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Man, don't be thinking he's going to be a pickpocket. This kid is going to rob people. I know it. I know that's what's going to do.
No,
you just got to stay out of the way. Now, this is an example. This is where I'm going to extrapolate this out. This is an example of what I call future projection. What does this mean for this kid's life? Look at him. Is he going to be this aggressive, nasty 16-year-old that gets kicked out of every school because he can't control his temper, he can't control his impulses? He's just mean? No. You can't know this. There's no way. What we do know is he is wired kind of feisty. And even at that, he's only one. All right, if he were four, I'd feel more confident saying, yeah, he's kind of a feisty kid. But good parenting, strong parenting may be required here. His sister is a sweetheart. She's an angel. He's Cujo. So you deal with him. As I said, my son Peter was the toughest kid we had by far. I remember when we were potty training him. At one point, he was so mad about it that he waited till we were kind of occupied. He went in. He took the urine in the pot. We forgot to empty it. And he just went to the top of the steps, and he just poured it all down the steps, and he laughed hideously. Yeah. So, but he's, and that was when he was about two or three. So he's not at all like that now. He's still kind of feisty. He is fiery, but it's a guided fiery. So the issue really that she was saying is that, what does this mean for this kid's future? And that is something that many parents, well, okay, let me phrase this better. That is something that prior to the last three or four generations of the onslaught of experts, people were much better at parenting in the present. This is what's happening now. I got to deal with this. As opposed to, this is what's happening now. What does it mean? If we don't conquer this, what does it mean? That's scary. You can always future project. As I look back on my children, if somebody would have asked me, even at age 7, 8, 9, 10, 15, to predict what they would be like at 25 or 30 or 35, I would have missed it. And that's a lot more information than a one-year-old. The message here is, be very, very careful about over-analyzing the stuff that kids pull, or kind of what they're like when they're little. You deal with it. You recognize it. You say, yeah, this one is the feistiest of my kids. Okie dokie. I'll have to handle this. So this little one-year-old, I wonder what he'd be like when he's two. He could be a sweetheart. You don't know. He could be a sweetheart. And that's why I asked the question. Something going on physically? She said, no, we had him all checked out. All right, good enough. So that was the message that particular call. That's why I selected it for a look back call, not because I wanted to address a question about a one-year-old. I wanted to address the broader principle of future projection that happens to so many parents and makes them scared and frustrated and overreactive when a kid does something. Thank you for joining me here on this Look Back Friday. Thank my producer man, Andrew Krucek. Walk with God, and I'll tell you what, that's a good way to future project. You stay on that walk, the future looks pretty good.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.